Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 125. This is Kevin DeFrango. Sitting beside me is Ken Phillips. What is going on, good sir?
Well, not much, my friend. We're back together again at OPA Studios East, maybe? Is that what we're going with?
I guess
you're the new East. Yeah.
Yep, somehow I'm the new East, because you're definitely not West. You're just less further east.
Maybe you could be east and I'll be south, just to confuse everybody.
That works.
I love it. I'm doing well. Let's see, anything to catch up on? I'm watching some Dragon Ball Super lately.
I am almost finally caught up on Attack on Titan for season 3. I think I have 3 episodes to go, because they've slowly been replaying them on Cartoon Network there.
Okay.
They're at like 4 in the morning, so obviously I have to tape them. It's not like the old days when we would drink and stay up until 4 in the morning drinking, and I could have watched it.
On a Thursday night, yeah.
And, well, at least this is a Saturday night, so yeah, it worked.
Oh, Saturday night would be no problem, yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's pretty, what are you up to at this point then?
Rice just got killed in Titan form.
Ugh. Yeah, that I would say was kind of a big set piece for that season. Probably the big action kind of set piece.
Yeah, that definitely is going to have some repercussions, just because Historia had not really been wanting to be queen, but after she killed her own dad, she was ready to rock as queen.
Yeah, there was not really a lot of warm feelings between those two, father and daughter there. Kind of not really sure what his whole motivation is, I guess, still a mystery. Seeming to be a big, first class asshole, really.
Yeah, that kind of learning the interior politics. Because I've heard the show equated to Walking Dead, which there are certainly elements of that. Because Titans, not so much relevant in this season, except for that part.
Yeah, I feel like there definitely is a similarity between the concept of zombies and the Titans, contrasting differences. But you're right. This last third season, explicitly was said to be about fighting the enemy within, the human enemy, and some weird crap going on in that front. I thought it was really creepy.
Yeah.
Creepy when that Rice turned into a Titan, though. That was, licking the serum off the ground was a weird way to go for me.
Yeah, that was pretty pretty ugly, I guess. And even the fact that after he became a Titan, he drug his face on the ground the whole way to the wall, which ended up leaving him with no face.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't, obviously he was too weak to control the power. Because they do kind of mention that you need some type of control over the Titan power.
Yeah, well, I think he was turned into, or supposedly he would have been turned into a mindless Titan, if I'm not mistaken. Because of the, he didn't have one of he didn't have, like, the founding Titan or anything.
Oh, yeah, they're trying to get that back from Aaron.
Right.
Which, oh my god, he turned into such a whiny bitch, it was killing me.
Yeah, I don't know if I... What, because he was... he was going through some shit there. I don't know. He was going to get killed, ritualistically killed, basically. I would give him a little bit of a break.
He seemed a little too bummed about his... I don't know why... You would believe someone that kidnapped you talking about your father, I guess?
You know,
they're like, oh, your dad did all this evil stuff. And he's just like, oh my God, I can't believe that I'm such a reject. And I'm like, why are you believing this chump that you've never seen before?
I think it was matching with his memories that he did have, though. He could remember being injected by his father.
Oh, well, yeah.
So I think that partly, explains some of his behavior there. So this, of course, has been Attack on Titan talk.
Way past a decent expiration date, honestly. Well, this is like late enough that I did not feel uncomfortable saying spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Like, if you like that show and you haven't watched it at this point, you must have been moving when it first aired like I was. I mean, because that was my biggest problem is that... I did not have cable for some time here.
I suppose it could be somebody maybe watching on Netflix, because I don't think they've had the recent season on yet. Sorry about that, all you people out there. But
all you Netflixers onlys.
Yeah, it's worth checking out. So
yeah, that one is very, and the art is back in top form.
Yeah, I would agree that they did
because,
a better job of that.
Yeah, that you could tell that second season that they had just had the strike.
Yes, the one where they had like a piece of paper on a string that they were pulling to instead of actually animating.
Oh my god! Yeah, that was the worst thing. That was the most egregious error of bad animation.
I think that was the second to last episode. So
it was close to the end, yeah.
There kind of has been a style in that show, though, of doing like a tableau almost style of, it's not really animation, but they'll do like a, slowly moving or basically like a frame from a manga that they'll kind of, at least I assume it is, recreating frames from the manga. Maybe not, but it certainly seems to be in that kind of, it reminds me of a still frame style. And they'll have people be like, thinking or talking to each other, somehow.
Yeah. If it isn't from the manga, it's definitely inspired by, I would say.
Yeah.
That's definitely not too far fetched, but yeah, those are pretty cool too. I really think that they do a good job of, on those. They usually look pretty beautiful.
Yeah.
So I would not mind like a, one framed or something, like a single frame hanging up somewhere.
Yeah. I've been, like I said, catching up on Dragon Ball Super as well. And I feel like it's working better than I thought it would. Like if you told me on paper that they were going to bring back Frieza to fight for them, stand up for basically the universe that he's a part of, along with Goku and Vegeta and all those guys. I would say it sounds terrible, but they, having watched it, it actually works better than it does on paper, I feel like.
Now, is Beerus involved in this?
Yeah, Beerus is also involved. It's a the Tournament of Power, it's called, where all of the universes, or a lot of the universes, have to fight each other, and only one will survive, basically. The Grand Zeno will destroy all the other universes. So high stakes action, you could say.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to go from saving worlds to saving universes. you gotta kind of keep on keeping on here.
So that's why they were kind of desperate to go with Frieza as a member of their team to kind of
yeah, add a little depth to the lineup.
Right, you needed 10 people, so Master Roshi made the cut, just to give you. Yeah, that's
you need. Did to, Krillin you need to, make the cut?
Yes, Krillin made the cut.
Oh my god, how does Krillin keep on making the cut?
Well, you got to fill a roster of 10 people, and I think the idea is that he's kind of a he's going to be able to use his tricks or. Mental, basically,
mental acumen.
Mental acumen to make a difference. Yeah. So,
oh my god.
17 and 18. Gohan, Piccolo, of course.
Oh yeah, well, and Gohan's kind of cracked me up, at least from, 'cause was I watching Super when they had was it the tournament between Beerus and his brother? Or is this a different
That was a different, that was the earlier tournament. Yeah. I
but
forget
the,
what that
is
was
that the
called.
same series though?
It's Dragon Ball Super, yeah.
Super. Okay. So yeah, you're just later in that that story time then.
Correct. Yeah.
Okie
But, you know, it's fun stuff. Frieza's still an asshole.
dokie. I mean, that was definitely one of his charms, is that he was an asshole. I mean, if you didn't like him because of that, then I guess he was doing his job.
Yeah, I was almost seeing him do like a face turn, seemingly, but no, I don't think that's in the cards.
No. That's good. I
Yeah.
mean, it's as it should be. Like, I would think that he would be into his own self-preservation.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason that they agreed to go with him because, you know, he is part of the universe, so he would also be destroyed if they didn't win. So given the circumstances.
It's kind of self-motivating there. That's one of those the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah. You have certain interests that are in common there. Yeah.
You need to have some Frieza always kind of had some flexible goals.
Oh yeah, he's nothing if not flexible.
Oh man.
Well, you know, well, what else becomes flexible, Kevin?
What?
If you chew on it for a while.
High points for high marks for that one.
It's what do we call that stuff? Bark?
You had
Birch
it.
bark, I guess. Black tar, as they say.
And this was a regular part of the Stone Age. That's what people used for. I mean, chewing gum has been around since the Stone Age, which is kind of crazy to think about, that there's, been some type of oral fixation since that long ago.
Yeah, I mean, they found evidence that people in the Stone Age were chewing this birch bark, turning it into a sticky black tar. Like they would take basically ribbons of birch bark, I guess, chew on it, and turn it into this. I don't know how long you would have to chew on it, Kevin, because there's nobody who does this process today that we know of.
Yeah, I can't believe someone's not heirlooming this process.
Artisanal, artisanally chewed black tar is not on the market, as far as I know.
Well, there we go. We got our new business plan, Ken. It's gonna be part of Stunt Granny Enterprises. Birch bark chewing.
Yeah.
Wow. After we're done doing this show, we're just gonna start chewing birch bark.
I think we should go out into the park here behind your house and look for some birch trees.
Put it up on our pa that'll be for our Patreon customers.
I got a flashlight on my phone, so that we should be fine. We need to strike while the iron's hot. I agree. Yeah, so I'm not quite sure how long we're going to have to chew on it, Kevin, to get it really turned into this sticky black tar.
Yeah, they did not, obviously, like you said, no one would know the exact process.
But they
You
did.
can kind of see the outcome.
But they did apparently use it to make tools, so, and sort of as a, heavy glue maybe to fix arrowheads onto arrows and blades onto axes. And they found the teeth marks to indicate that people had been chewing this birch tar at the Stone Age sites.
I mean, and it's pretty interesting that 'cause they took those and they were
Well, yeah, beyond even just chewing it, though, what they have somehow found out is that they can actually find ancient human DNA that has been preserved in this black tar since people were chewing on it.
Yeah, well, you know, there's always the old cop trick of waiting till someone throws something in a wastebasket, like chewing gum or a cigarette butt, and you get some saliva off of that thing and you take it in for DNA testing. So I would imagine it's something along those lines.
Yes. So it's interesting because it turns out that this is actually a pretty good way of preserving DNA, especially since it seems like each person, today we wouldn't really chew or share our chewing gum, right? And it was seemingly the same back then, because in the pieces that they've looked at, it seems like there's not only been one person chewing a piece of tar. So it's not like you're going to get contaminated or mixed up
Yeah, there was no
human
ABC back
DNA.
then either.
Yeah.
There's no already been chewed.
Least that's, yeah, so that seems like this is actually a good way to get like individual's DNA.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of crazy. You would not necessarily think of this, like the DNA from these ancient humans, it's tough to find their remains. It's tough to get DNA from them. But this is an interesting and I think innovative and ingenious even way of getting some of this DNA to like, think to look there even.
Well, oh yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy what they've been able to find out with kind of less these days. Like, I guess it's another one of those, improvements in science kind of tangents that we like to go on. I get the better our equipment gets, the more we're gonna find out about the past, even though, like you said, we don't have anyone here to present it. And I did think that it was pretty interesting that they were mentioning that they were trying to the one paper was trying to guess what the one woman would have looked like, and they were thinking dark skin, dark hair, and blue eyes.
Yes, along the similar lines as the quote unquote Cheddar Man, who I believe we did a story on at the time that this happened. But
Yeah, we may have. I don't remember the Cheddar Man name itself.
I think that they said they looked like something like
Oh
that.
yeah, I definitely remember seeing that picture. So if we didn't do anything on it, been about it.
So I'm guessing this would have been, at the time when humans were still evolving, pale skin, basically,
Yeah.
possibly.
Yeah, which I mean, because they're talking about this being anywhere between 10,000 years old to like 5,700 years ago.
Right. I think the Cheddar Man would have been about 10, more than the 10,000 years ago end of things, which is quite a
Yeah,
long time ago.
and the woman that they compared to Cheddar Man was 5,700 year old. So, that's still a pretty long way off. But you would think that maybe, but I guess I don't know how they can say what gradation of skin she would have. Maybe they were already lightening up at that point. Because if nothing's changed in half the timeline, you would think that well, yeah, I guess I always expect gradual change for something like that. And you would think that there would be some type of change in those nearly 4,000, well, a little over 4,000 years of of evolution.
Yeah, there could have been some change, I suppose. I'm not sure how what the speed of evolution, is. Probably changes based on population and conditions, but
Well, this is also probably a good point to bring up.
I should have mentioned too that it wasn't just human DNA that they recovered, because they were able to also get some DNA of the bacteria and various micro organisms that also, live in people in the in your mouth or what have you, as people were chewing on these things, they were able to see that a lot of the microbes seem to be very similar to what we have in modern humans, with some differences that maybe indicate a different kind of diet, you know, less grains to feed certain bacteria to make them grow.
No.
Because they've been able to find out that what you eat definitely, you know, there's different kinds of microbes that it will want to, you know, that will thrive in an environment when you're eating certain kinds of foods versus other kinds of foods.
Gotcha.
That's kind of an interesting way to be able to tell a little bit about what people were eating and stuff too then, kind of, even though you're not able to analyze anything directly, just their, what they've chewed basically.
Can help you narrow it down at a minimum. So yeah, that's pretty interesting, part of this whole thing too. And there is kind of a similar study to this one, too, where they found a woman who had a lapis lazuli, which is a special, like, blue color in her gums.
Yeah, I think it comes from a mineral or something like a rock, maybe.
Yeah, and it was used to blue was definitely not a color that you found frequently in the earlier ages, even if this one is even more recent, as 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, I've heard it said that blue is the most recently invented color as far as humans go. If you look at like ancient writings, it's really people don't use that like blue very much at all.
Okay.
It's only kind of mostly because you don't see it in nature very often.
Outside of the sky, you don't see it too often.
Yeah, and even the sky is not blue that often, really. I mean, well, not every day anyway.
No, this is true.
So it's not super common, but,
I guess that does make sense that, and plus, I mean, you know, a lot of dirts and everything are more browns and reds
and stuff you get dye from is not going to be blue.
Oh, right. Is there indigo? Was that an ink? At some juncture,
I want to say it was maybe a plant or something like that.
Yeah, I want to say that one was on the list. My history is a little bit rusty in that department, at least.
But for a while, lapis lazuli was the only source, or maybe the best source, of the color blue that was kind of prized to be able to, you know, and not very rare. So it was only used for, like, say, important documents or books.
And since we're talking 1,000 years ago, that lands us dead in the Middle Ages, baby.
Yes, and that means we're talking about monasteries and, you know, writing books by hand before they had the printing press. And it was interesting in this case because they were able to tell that based on the lapis that they found in this woman's teeth. Well, and it was a woman. I kind of jumped the gun there a little bit.
I was wondering which one you're going to go with first.
She was using this super rare material that would have been, you know, ground up apparently with teeth in order to be made into pigment or ink,
Yeah, for the manuscripts.
And making, like, the illuminations and drawings and things on the religious documents and manuscripts. So this was important because people hadn't thought that, you know, women were actually doing any of the work of writing out these books and religious texts, which people knew that monks had been doing. But now this was kind of the first evidence, really, that... you know, the nuns, I suppose, were also doing this.
Yeah, well, I was trying to figure out. I thought they did say that. Oh yeah, Ultramarine was the Keller.
That's just a cool name. I don't know. I like that. Like, not just Marine, it's Ultramarine.
Okay, yeah, because I forgot that this one was the one woman, Allison Beach, is a historian right here at Ohio State.
Oh, okay, that's right.
And she had cataloged the overlooked contribution of women's to medieval book production. But of course, you know, well, they were saying that the books that are signed by men, but many of them are unsigned.
Yes, the vast majority of manuscripts are unsigned. So that's interesting. Yeah. A small number of surviving manuscripts are signed by women, and scholars have found correspondence between monks and nuns about book production. So there's some more indicators here.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is stuff that's it's pretty crazy that you find out new stuff about stuff that old at this time, like that there's still stuff to find.
Now, I think part of the reason they were able to find the lapis lazuli in this woman's teeth is that their dental care was not as good as we have it here currently. So, like, the layers of plaque basically built up over top of the or they became trapped in layers of plaque and then another layer built on top of it. The lapis was trapped in the plaque, basically.
Yeah, it was preserved through plaque.
So I guess, Kevin, our dental care is kind of robbing future historians of this this knowledge, really, when you think about it. And if you really wanted to do them a favor, maybe don't brush your teeth. I don't know. Or don't go to the dentist, at least.
Oh, well, I am going to take a I'm going to keep on going to the dentist.
All right, me too, Kevin.
Sorry, having somewhat decent teeth.
Sorry, future historians.
Yeah, screw you, future historians. If you can't convert whatever it is that information's going to be on by the time I die, because it's probably not going to be in the same form that it is now.
Yeah, I can leave some chewing gum behind, maybe.
I will leave behind digital chewing gum.
Okay. That sounds like another idea for a business startup idea. Digital chewing gum.
Digital chewing gum.
Yeah.
Oh, we're coming up with
some great ideas tonight, Kevin. Almost as great an idea as swallowing a live catfish, I would say.
Yeah. I do think that is... an idea that would have sounded great to us when we were doing entirely too much drinking.
Yes, probably.
I'm really kind of shocked, to be quite frank with you, that neither of us ended up eating a goldfish. But I mean, neither of us had fish tanks. So I mean, right. That makes it kind of easy not to pull this off.
I don't think I would ever really feel the need to eat a goldfish, although... I don't know why I felt the need to roll in the snow after a Ohio State
Arizona
Super Bowl
State.
Game. Yes, or not Super Bowl, College Bowl game.
Yeah, I can't remember. That had to have been, I think, no, it wasn't the Rose Bowl because it was at night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a later game for sure.
Maybe it was, oh man, that had to have been in the Fiesta Bowl.
I bet you're right. That sounds right to me, actually. Jake Plummer.
Yeah, and I still can't believe that's been, was it 20 years since that happened?
Oh, wow. I don't know. I can't believe we let the 20th anniversary go by without...
Yeah, Tim mentioned that to me, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's been 20 years since, Jake the Snake rolled into the end zone like that. And that you started a New Year's tradition that lasted, I don't know, 3 or 4 years at least.
Oh my god, that's right. We did keep that going for a little while.
Yeah, because I remember jumping in a snow pile the ensuing year, like a gigantic snow pile out, because I lived in a different part of Glen Morris at that point.
I think we might have had trouble jumping in a snow pile this year. I don't think we had snow during the New Year's time.
No, it would have been on the ground. But, I mean, we did do a Jake Plummer roll after the Steelers won their most recent Super Bowl.
Ooh.
I think that I've done one after each Super Bowl win, just in honor of Jake Plummer.
Well, it's a good thing they didn't get to the Super Bowl this year in a way, Kevin.
It would have been good because it would have involved the Patriots not being
there. Yeah, that's true. That could have been good anyway. Goddamn Patriots.
Oh, 21 years. I'm sorry. Last year is the 20th anniversary.
Yes. A child born that year would be old enough to drink now. Oh, good stuff.
Because I forgot. Tim has the sweatshirt from the bowl game itself.
That's awesome. That's a great picture.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You're right about that though, Kevin. We did do some dumb things for sure.
Yeah, and it was not surprising that much akin to those shenanigans, there was a person in the Netherlands that got so drunk that they decided to down a goldfish.
Yeah.
With beer.
Well, they had a fish tank in the apartment they were in.
Yep.
And there was a goldfish in there. So I guess this has been a tradition for a long time. People will party and decide to eat some goldfish.
It's been a
college drinking tradition for a while.
Yeah, it kind of cracked me up that they explicitly had to outlaw it at several colleges during 1 year.
Apparently, like, local pet stores will... refuse to sell goldfish to college students who they think are going to just eat them, which is probably good.
Yeah, well, when you have a holiday for such a thing...
That's right. There was like a yearly tradition at that school.
Yeah, at that school. It's just like, oh my gosh. I just didn't feel like rolling down to it because it's kind of off of the... oh no, it wasn't LSU.
Oh.
Yeah, which school was it? Oh, it was called Doghead.
Yeah.
Oh, Colby College in Maine.
During Doghead. That is a strange... an annual booze-soaked St. Patrick's Day celebration with murky origins. Ooh, I like that.
Well, don't all... drinking holidays have murky because everyone was shockingly drinking.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, you probably shouldn't be selling goldfish if you know they're going to be eaten. Just because you're not, like, licensed to sell them to be used for food, I would think. It's like they're not food grade. Necessarily, right? Would you assume?
I guess you're just eating sushi.
Okay.
Live sushi.
But what if it's like sick or something? I don't know. I feel like you're taking a bit of a chance there, personally.
Well, there are some people that think you're taking a chance eating an egg with the yolk still intact for the most part, so... And see, I say to those people, buzz the fuck off.
I guess I don't like that either. I don't know. Maybe I'm one of those people. I mean, I wouldn't care if somebody else did it. But...
Leave my eggs alone, man. I want them nice and runny.
I never really liked runny eggs. Just a personal preference. I suppose that makes me a not goldfish eater.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I'd... It's still a little weird to eat something live, in my opinion. I do remember that was another drinking tradition of having to drink during an episode of Iron Chef Original when an ingredient was live.
Yeah, and they talked about live octopus being a delicacy in this article.
So, yeah, I knew I could bring it back around.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, so I mean, there are certainly some cultures that do eat at least similar things, or kind of go to this end. But this story in particular was about a man from Holland who did have an aquarium, and his friends were drinking, and evidently they polished off a number of goldfish at this party.
Yeah, multiple goldfish for sure. Which
setting aside the other college shenanigans, this one's back in the Netherlands. So after polishing off all the goldfish,
yeah, they ran out of goldfish.
They decided to. there was one fish. And this is where it's just like, did this not sit in on you that they said that there was one fish left in the tank? A 2.5-inch long bronze catfish.
That another participant had found too large to ingest. Now, what does that mean? I mean, that's a lot going on in that sentence, I feel like. Like, did he try to swallow it? Or did he just pick it up and think, no, this isn't going to work?
Yeah, I don't know if maybe he started trying to get it down and just gagged on it. Because I would think with a goldfish, you can kind of drop that down pretty quick.
Usually goldfish you have in a tank is pretty going to be pretty small.
Yeah, I would think that you could treat that somewhat similar to, you know, taking a vitamin or something like that. I know it's bigger than larger than that, but I would think that that'd go down pretty quickly. Something that's 2.5 inches long is more substantial than that. Like, I mean, you're kind of dealing with this somewhat large fish at this point.
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about some things, 2.5 inches is not very long. a fish, I would say that's pretty long. Yeah,
if you're trying to eat it whole, if it's something that you're trying to eat whole, 2.5 inches. Of course, maybe we shouldn't tell certain people in our lives about this. Unless we're just revealing facts about ourselves right now, too.
Well, yeah, I would say for sure a 2.5-inch long fish would make me think twice about eating it. Of course, I just said I wouldn't eat a small fish, so it doesn't matter.
I would not be down for going for the larger fish. Like, I could see myself going for a goldfish, but I also go, that's fucking stupid.
So this guy was 28 years old when this happened.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if I would have done this at 28, and I'm definitely going to say no.
Yeah, I've got to admit that by the time I was 28, the levels of drinking had started to decline.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the thing that he hadn't considered is that one of the differences between a catfish and a goldfish is those like little things that stick out, kind of look like whiskers, right? That's why they get called catfish.
Well, there was that, and honestly, more importantly, the self-defense mechanism that this particular catfish has, which are the fins on its back that extend when they feel like it's in danger.
That was what was extending?
Yeah.
So it can shoot out these barbs, basically, which it did inside his throat.
Yeah.
And he began to cough and vomit blood, which is just unfortunate.
Yeah. Had to be taken to a hospital, obviously. They did get it dislodged. He is still with us. The fish is not, but it was kind of weird. They have a picture of the fish. What happens to the fish is pretty strange, to be completely honest with you.
It ends up going to a museum, right?
Yeah, it went to a museum. And I mean, it just looks, It almost looks like they somehow turned in a fish into a giant, like, cheese puff or something. Like, I guess it's kind of fascinating to me that this is how it turned out. Like, how did that happen when it's just in his throat? Is it kind of... I didn't look one of these up. Because it was called a Cory catfish.
Well, I wonder if it kind of dried out after the fact, too. We might be looking at some multi-processes going on.
Oh, no. Why? I was thinking, oh, that's how it came out of his mouth? But, yeah, I guess you're right. They probably could not just...
preserve it for all times. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was surprised that it was just seemingly laying on the table or counter here in this picture.
It looks like it's mounted.
Oh, yeah. But a lot of times you'll see like specimens put in a glass with some kind of embalming fluid or something.
But, yeah, whatever the drying out I'm going to assume that you're right and that there is some type of drying out process here.
Yeah.
And yeah, this looks kind of weird and gross.
Yep. Definitely not something you'd want to try to swallow.
No.
As far as I can, unless you think it looks like a Cheeto, which you, it kind of does. But yeah.
Yeah.
Not very an appetizing Cheeto though still. You'd have to be really hungry, I feel like, to go for that Cheeto.
Yeah, I don't want a fish-shaped Cheeto.
No, a desiccated catfish Cheeto?
Yeah.
That's not going to catch on. I don't care.
I don't think anyone's going to vote for that when Cheetos asks for what their new design should be.
Yeah, and I don't think the desiccated catfish flavor Cheeto is going to catch on either.
Skyrocket. No. It seems like something that might catch on in Japan.
You're right. There could be something like that, like a fish-flavored, yeah. I could see that. I shouldn't speak too soon, I guess, when you consider the international audience.
Yeah, I mean, come on, Ken. We speak to the masses.
That's right.
The white people are not heard enough.
It's a small world. Yeah.
Oh, Ken, well, would you call this fish ugly?
I would indeed, Kevin. It's not a pretty fish.
Well, Ken, there's something else that's ugly that is on our docket for this evening, and that is internet ugly in the aesthetic of failing on purpose. It is definitely something that has come into my purview. Mm-hmm. I will admit, just because I have seen a lot of memes.
Yes.
And I do sit there and think to myself, that looks fucking terrible.
Yes. The point of memes is not always to look good. And I think a lot of times it's to kind of look bad. And at least it occurred to me that after seeing a lot of memes. and I was actually glad to read this, come across this article that kind of backs up what my... thought was, I guess, that this is something that people are doing on purpose.
Yeah. After reading this article, I'm like, well, not that I didn't kind of already catch on, because it's kind of been years at this point. Because I don't feel like this is a completely new phenomenon.
No. But I don't know if I've ever heard it called internet ugly before. It seems like a good name for it.
Yeah, it seems very appropriate. Because I do kind of understand, like, there are times where, because they were talking about the timeliness of it. And, like, it seemed like you need to post the jokes right away or else someone's used it already. Like, right. If you're not watching whatever it is that everyone's watching and you don't make that joke right away, it kind of is like, oh, someone did that already. So, you know, they were talking about how one of the factors of internet ugly is just the fact that that the speed the internet moves at, they feel the need to get it out, that it's getting it out there is more important than being, you know, correctly drawn.
Yeah, or looking, yeah, pretty, quote unquote.
Yeah.
That, I think, has, you know, turned into sort of a mark of being genuine or like real, you know? So people kind of are gravitating towards that as a, you know, a genuine experience of sorts. So as a mark of being genuine. And I had seen, I've been on like 4chan a couple times just to check out what's going on over there. And you see, you know, that's kind of the home for this kind of thing, I guess.
Yeah, anyway. I did have to laugh that, you know, some of these people, and I'm not really surprised that even though they're trying to be shitty, they ended up learning something from it. Because this one guy is calling himself Shitty Water Keller. But, like, if you have to keep on repetitiously doing something, even if it's ugly, like, you learn something about doing it.
Yeah, and, you know, looking at this shitty watercolor, I would agree that it's not, you know, it doesn't really look like the landscape or anything. but the shape of it, at least, is pretty good, a pretty good reproduction.
If you just thought that he was blocking this out for further detail later, I would not be surprised if that, you know, you could sell me on that. Like, this is the first pass, and then he's going to clean it up.
It doesn't look like a landscape, but yes, the kind of the shapes of the blobs look pretty good compared to the original picture. So, I mean, I can see, and I think that is part of the aesthetic too. Like, there's something about it that is, you know, a good take, or there's something about it that's good. At the same time, it's very rough and unfinished as well. I think that's part of the internet ugly, you know, and that's a very nebulous thing to say, that there's something about it that's good, but, you know, it's either, you know, funny or it's almost good. In a way, almost in that kind of uncanny valley of being, you know, good or bad.
Well, yeah, because they show another, because evidently on Reddit they have shitty a lot of stuff, evidently. Which, again, I don't really go to myself too frequently. I did have to laugh. This one's called Shitty Earth Porn, and it's called the iconic New York City skyline. And you can see how there would be a nice skyline. This would be a nice skyline picture. But the gentleman in question took it. It would appear while, if he's not driving himself, at least in a vehicle. Because there's definitely motion, and it's through a bridge.
Yeah, it's
which makes it, you know, it looks like it's a good spot to take a picture aside from the whole bridge thing.
Yeah, you can see this a really nice look at the New York City skyline, but through the rails of a bridge, like you said. So most of it is blocked out, although you do get to see the skyline itself. So yeah, that's a good example of it too there, because it's a,
yeah,
you know.
Well, like you said, there's something to it. Like, you can kind of, at least this one, I can appreciate what the guy is going for. Like, because, yeah, if you're particularly going, okay, this is, you know, because, yeah, like you said, like, there's some type of draw to it. And again, like, I think you could see how it would be a nice cityscape photo if they it exited the other side of the bridge.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's almost like there has to be, you have to, in some ways, add something to the experience, you know, of there's something on top of just there being like a picture of the skyline, which maybe, you know, you see on postcards, they're very common these days. You can see these beautiful images very easily, but it's maybe more rare almost to get these like, not necessarily beautiful and well-produced content. Like, I think there is something maybe exciting about that for people.
Yeah, and even I was going to say that there isn't anything like that for the Nicolas page picture that heads this article, but now that I'm looking at it, there's something that maybe encapsulates how Nick Cage looks that, you know, kind of helps a shitty hand-drawn version of it look kind of, you know, it looks more manic, I guess. Like, you can almost feel it in this shitty drawing.
Yeah, it has the same energy, I think.
Yeah, it has the same energy. Even though it looks bad, it has the same energy. That's,
yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Somehow it's capturing the essence of Nick Cage there. And it is technically shitty looking, but at the same time, it does somehow work. And yeah, this Great Gatsby cake, that's pretty good as well.
Yeah.
People can check out the article for these pictures.
Yeah, I was going to say that really might be the one that's just kind of bad.
Yeah, it's bad, but it's still, somebody went through some effort. An effort was made.
An effort was made.
You can see this yellow kind of thing here is brought over, but these lips and eyes are terrible.
Well, I don't understand what the yellow circle is here. I'm like, that's not even close to, like, diagonal lines. I'm like, you're not even in the neighborhood.
No.
That's in the green tower?
Yeah.
I'm like, what the...
It's like somebody may have once seen the cover to this book and then decided they wanted to make a cake from it, from memory.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
You know, that one bothered me, I've got to admit, a little bit more than some of the other ones. I don't quite get the same vibe out of that one.
Yeah. To each their own, I suppose.
I mean,
I could definitely see that something about the amount of effort that went into it, and yet the result is so poor that,
there is, you can tell that there's definitely a level of work that went into that.
Right.
That was maybe a little above and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, definitely harder than making your average birthday cake.
Like, I'm looking at the Great Gatsby cover, and I'm not quite sure what makes it iconic. Like, I mean, it's okay.
Yeah, I mean,
I kind of feel a little bit of a vibe coming off of it, but...
If I had read it, maybe I would feel differently, but... Yeah, it's not like a well-known piece of, iconic artwork to me.
Yeah.
On its own, the cover, that
is. I guess that's the other thing, is sometimes you're like, oh, I didn't know that came from that.
Yeah.
This is not this situation.
Right, no, I agree. But yeah, fun article to check out, I agree.
Internet ugly is definitely something that that we all deal with.
Yep.
And, Ken, this is another one that we were on theatlantic.com for the rest of the articles, and we're finally moving on from that wonderful website and moving to Vox.com.
The Atlantic's crushing it. What can I say?
But I did just kind of laugh when I saw the metal chair that's in every restaurant, because I'm like, I know I have seen this chair in multiple restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's really what drew me into this. But it also kind of has, maybe it's the opposite of internet ugly, because everyone thinks that it looks good.
Hmm.
Or at least looks good for the price point.
I mean, I think it does look good myself. I'm not admittedly a designer.
I would say that it's not my most favoritely designed chair, but they did mention too that because it's usually made out of a solid surface, that it kind of serves the purpose of, lack of a better term, eat it or beat it situation, or eat it and beat it situations.
Yeah,
where they don't really want you to be too comfortable.
Yeah.
They don't want you to linger at their establishment. And this chair definitely fits that bill. Like, you're not going to linger at any establishment with this style of And I guess I should mention the design of the chair, because hey, you can get it any number of places. Yeah, French designer Xavier Pouchard brought the Tolix, Tolix chair to market in 1934.
The A chair, I believe it might be known
Yeah.
as. Yeah, I feel like, yeah, you're right. It's a hard chair, just a metal bottom with no padding. I don't know. It's a very simple design, but somehow pleasing to the eye as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, the copper one that's in the second photo is quite good looking. And yeah, I guess in that instance, it is not poorly designed.
And I just feel, I don't know. Maybe it is because I've seen it at different places, but it does feel like it does give a comforting sense of familiarity, I would say.
Yeah, I found it kind of interesting that this chair has it was popular when it first came out. It lost some popularity. It came back, lost popularity, and is kind of making another resurgence in popularity because you can buy it as low as I think like $50 per chair. Which they didn't really give you a range of how expensive. Oh, yeah, the chair on Design Within Reach, which I get their catalog, they have some beautiful stuff in there.
Not necessarily within everyone's reach, though, I would say.
No. It is such a lot. The name of the book is such a lie. Like, I'm like, oh my God, you've got to be fucking kidding me. Who do you think you're, like, really, man? Within reach of who?
Really?
The people that make $1 million a year?
So yeah,
But
Bob's Discount Furniture has sold them for as little as $20, Kevin.
yeah, and they're saying 80 to 100 is closer to the kind of average. Which it does make sense that that seems a little more affordable for those people in the market to put up their establishment with chairs.
Yeah, it does seem like it's a type of chair that you would have at like a like you say a coffee shop or something along those lines where people are going to be coming in. And
Yeah,
it's
I feel it.
easy to clean up, easy to stack somewhere. Very
Yeah,
utilitarian.
the stacking was mentioned as a very big draw because then they could put it in one pile and keep them out of the way, which does make a great deal of sense. Anytime you have something that's especially if it's a restaurant use that's easy to clean and easy to stack, like it's you can't really ask for more.
Yeah, I agree. So, if you want to buy these chairs, they're out there, guys.
Yeah, we are not sitting on one right now, nor do we really plan on sitting one. We bought our bar stools for the house here, so I think we are out of the seat game for a little while.
All right. Well,
But before we get out of here, Ken, I always enjoy the beers of Sideswipe Brewing. We went to their 5th anniversary party, had a couple of tasty beers there, but we also did bring back their Imperial Chocolate Porter. What were your thoughts on this beverage?
I really liked it. I don't know if I picked up on any hints of chocolate necessarily. It was definitely a darker beer.
Yeah, it's a maybe a little bit thicker, leaning towards a stout, even though it's called a porter.
Yeah, it is a heavy porter. But I like I said, I liked it.
Yeah, 9% ABV, so it's definitely a little bit on the stronger end, which you should expect out of an Imperial. I do get a little bit of chocolate, but I guess when you're calling yourself chocolate, I kind of expect a heavy dose of chocolate more than something.
Yeah.
It's a little more subtle, and I guess I have learned, too, that I haven't minded letting my beers warm up a little bit to try and get a little more full flavor out of them.
Yeah, it always...
I do think that that aids in kind of tasting some of the more subtleties of, yeah. Of beverages.
Yeah, that kind of... always bums me out a little bit when people are talking about ice cold beer, because the reason you would drink it ice cold is so you don't actually taste it. so it people are drinking their beers ice cold because they basically don't like the taste of beer. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. And as there is always a reminder here, I was definitely a corn syrup man. in my day, in the ice cold beer days.
Dilly dilly?
dilly dilly. it is still driving me completely bonkers that they keep on not mentioning yeast as one of their ingredients. I'm like, motherfuckers, your beer cannot ferment if you don't have yeast. And it definitely imparts a flavor, because there's a reason why there's different strains of yeast.
Yeah.
It's so that, you know, the beer kind of comes out in the style that you want it to come out.
So they're like saying barley, hops, and water or something like that?
Well, and Budweiser has rice instead of the corn syrup.
Ah, okay. Well, it's not like rice should be part of your beer either, necessarily. It's not a traditional ingredient.
Well, it kind of depends. I know that the Japanese... Some of the Japanese beers are rice-based.
All right.
Which okay. I guess is not surprising given the situation over there.
Japan is my blind spot tonight, apparently. I missed out on the fish flavored Cheetos. Yeah. And now
We've talked about Japanese beer. Game shows I don't know how many times.
I know. You think I would know a little bit more about the culture.
But yeah. Yeah. I agree. Like, I do not have a lot of beer calories to spend on my person these days. I am definitely going to spend them somewhere that does not involve an ice cold beer. Because I do remember going, oh man, I can't drink that beer when it's warm. And now I'm like, oh, I don't mind drinking a kind of warm beer because it tastes better.
Yeah, you definitely get more. I mean, it depends on the beer, I suppose. Maybe if you're drinking a Budweiser, you don't actually want to taste it, as you said, as we alluded to. But yeah, if it's a good tasting beer, it's not going to ruin it to be a little, you know. I think in Europe, don't they drink mostly at room temperature?
I think that is a little bit of a falsehood, at least in the experience that I had in the mid-90s there. Because that would have... Yeah, I think that's been over 20 years too.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's not as cold. It's not ice cold. You don't get a frozen glass.
Right.
For sure, which kind of helps keep things warmer just from the jump.
Yeah.
You know, if you're trying to cool it even more as you pour it. Like that's one place to start. But yeah, because I never felt like the German beers were like warm, at least from what I remember. I do remember liking the taste. So yeah. I don't know, maybe I did drink them a little bit warmer than I remember, but I don't remember them being like warm.
Yeah. Or you could have just been drinking too much that you don't remember one way or the other.
That is distinctly possible. So, Frack goes at 33. I'm at Frango 11. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever you listen to us. Or what? Apple Music is what I should be saying.
Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts.
Yeah. Wherever you guys know how to get podcasts. Just give us a rating.
Yep.
Thanks.
Do it. Night.